am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Fulfilling my own destiny. Hey everybody, this is Jan Revell with Purpose Talk Radio, and I'm coming to you today from beautiful Sedona with an absolutely gorgeous day. The sun is shining, there's a little bit of a breeze, and all of the plants outside are just sort of dancing in the breeze. It's quite lovely. I just got here. I've been here a week, not quite. I got here last Monday evening and came to you last week from Kingston, Arizona, from the Powerhouse Museum there. So it's kind of a different setting today. In any case, I'm here, I'm getting settled, and I managed to either get allergies or a cold or altitude or something or other. I'm blaming it on all of those things. So if I sound a little bit stuffed up, well, I really am. And today we have a fabulous guest. Wait a minute. First of all, I want to remind you that that wonderful theme song of ours called I Am Me, I Am Who I Am, was created by True Trinity. And that group is made up of Cindy Freeman and Jillian Clark and Rachel Martinez. And don't you just love that song? I really do. So today, the card that I drew for the show today is called The Coat. And the coat shows a young woman who is, she's got on, looks like medieval dress. You've got one of those little scarves, you know, that go from a veil that go down around her, under her chin, quite loosely. It must be decorative in any case. And the coat is very, very colorful. Reminds me in a way of the coat of many colors. And it's not only a protection, a coat of protection, but if you remember the story of Joseph and the coat of many colors, is that story or that coat of many colors leads a person to connections with many, many different people who are influential. There are people who are, he met with the Pharaoh, he met with all kinds of other people, and he was able to also work with dreams. So one of the messages of this card is to follow your dreams, to follow your vision, find a vision and follow it. And when you are staying true to your vision, then this coat of many colors is going to be with you and bring you into connection with people who are going to help you along your way and who have influence for you. So again, today our guest is Freeman Michaels. And Freeman is an author. He has done a lot of different things. And so I'm going to not waste any time on introducing him. I'm going to let him introduce himself, and I'm going to bring Freeman into the show right away. Hey, Freeman, how are you doing?
Hey, Jan, I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's great to have you here. I'm glad you could.
I know we landed. I didn't know if we were going to make it, but we're here.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're here. I don't know. We had some technical difficulties before. Hopefully, everything will be fine now. We'll see what happens. I just got to notice that there may be another issue, but we'll just keep on going on, and we'll get it figured out.
Sounds great.
So you do some work with people with personal visions, is that correct?
It's a part of what I do.
Okay.
The vision is a critical component, from my perspective, of transformation. So people come to me often with patterns that they don't actually call them patterns. They usually call them problems. They come to me with repeating situations that occurs in their life that they'd like to fix or solve or change. And my work first is to talk them down from that perspective, help them recognize that it's a pattern of behavior, patterns of thinking, even emotional patterns. We call them scripts that seem to keep playing again and again and again. And the way to interrupt the pattern is to define for oneself what one really wants, to create a sense of vision for one's life. and then to go about proclaiming that. And in service to that, we can do a lot of repair to aspects of our experience that have been fractured. We can put Humpty Dumpty back together again. But the truth is, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't. And they wouldn't, and they can't. It's not possible. So, you know, each of us comes with a certain amount of fracture, and our work is to put that together, and in service to a sense of what we're about, what we want to create and generate for our lives, and that's where the vision piece comes in.
Okay, so talk a little bit more about fracturing. I know we all do have issues that come up and problems or fractures or whatever you want to name you want to give them. And sometimes they last throughout our lifetime.
Yeah. Well, now, okay, so perspective-wise, again, I don't use the word problem. I don't see it as
okay.
a problem. I see it as an opportunity. And look, we all have places where we have what we're calling fractures, places where we took on an interpretation that, you know, may not be serving us. This shows up a lot with interpretations that lead to I'm not good enough or any of the I can'ts or I shouldn'ts in my life. So what happens is we have to have a way of holding those pieces of our experience that allows for them, so that we can relate to those parts of us without identifying with them. In other words, we don't want the fractured aspects of me running the show. In simple terms, part of my personal beliefs about not being good enough led to a behavior where I was constantly trying to prove myself, constantly trying to win people over, right? We talk about this in terms of being a people pleaser. And so what I've had to come to do is hold the part of me that wants everyone to like me in a space of compassion and understanding, because I don't want that part of me running the show. So here's how I've described this in the past, and I'll use this to illustrate it. So, for example, I'll use the phrase, in terms of the there's two ways it plays out. One way is defensive. And so what I'm saying energetically is, I don't care if you like me. I don't care if you like me. Now, that's not the words I'm using, but basically I'm unconsciously operating from the place of me that wants to be liked, right? I'm going to the defensive place of, I don't care if you like me. The
right.
other side of that is, please like me, please like me, please like me. Now, again, those aren't the words out of my mouth. I'm saying things like, I'm Freeman, and did you know I did this, and did you know this about me, and da-da-da-da-da, and there's a kind of desperation. And so to the degree I can hold that part of me that doesn't feel likable, right? If I can hold that part of me with a place of compassion, I can observe it. And so when it comes up, and it does come up, I can go, wow, I'm hearing from the part of me that doesn't feel likable or lovable or whatever, and it's not directing my choices, right?
Right.
And the piece that was which you started with, which is, what is my vision for my life that I can move into that allows me to clean up these parts of me, hold them in this compassionate way in service to where I'm going? That's a game changer, right? Because most people, they are framing their lives by looking backwards in terms of what happened to me. And this is the therapy model. And while it's got a place, I think, you know, developmentally, I went through a lot of therapy. I think it's a challenging way to approach it, because we keep referencing back in terms of trying to fix what's wrong with us versus coming to terms with what's wrong with us in the most generous and generative way, so that we can move into what it is we have to do and give and be in the world. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I love that of the who we want to do and be in the world.
Yeah.
This is a very important, to me it's important anyway.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's critical. And I briefly went back and forth about the idea of a personal proclamation, and I do a lot of proclaiming. I think it's very important to state who I am and what I'm about. And just a few days ago, I was in a beautiful workshop with my dear friend Gabrielle Nosevich, who was the main facilitator, and I was part of the staff, but But as part of the staff, I was learning a tremendous amount, as I always do when I go on these rides. And so I saw something reflected back to me that was really important for me to, A, come to grips with. Again, we're talking now about holding the fragments. And this has to do with the part of me that competes in an unhealthy way, right? This is my scarcity stuff about there's not enough and I have to fight to get mine. And it's very unconscious. And when it comes up, it's a little shocking to me because it doesn't match with my concept of myself, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this came up, and I was really taken aback, and it brought me to a very raw place. And out of it, I made a proclamation about who I am and what I stand for. Do you want me to? It's about a minute to read it. Would you like me to read it?
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to hear it.
Okay.
I know our listeners would, too.
Fantastic. So the world I create, a personal proclamation. I am the author of my own story. I get to choose how I interpret what has happened to me in the past and where I am headed via my vision for the future. I understand that what I focus on expands and what I put out I get back. Through my thoughts and actions, I generate my experience. I am what is wrong with the world I see and experience. I am also what is right with the world I see and experience. My internal reality is what is being expressed and reflected in my outer experience. I create a generous and abundant world where every human being is honored and celebrated for who they truly are and what they have to give. In my world, kindness and appreciation are the currency, and joy and fulfillment are the product. In my world, vulnerability is honored. Forgiveness and self-acceptance are practiced and celebrated. Everyone gets to win. I commit to doing whatever it takes to heal and integrate my personal fragments so that I can fully stand for cooperation and collaboration. I offer my gifts, talents, my time and energy, my focus and commitment to serving my personal mission, which is I facilitate growth and healing and transformation by modeling authenticity and sharing my work with others. In gratitude and service, Freeman Michael, September 13th, 2012.
Wow, that is really powerful. And it encompasses every part of your life.
That's it. And so when we proclaim who we are and what we stand for, it changes the game. And when we proclaim it again and again and again, we hold it in our consciousness in a kind of sacred way, right? I use it as a mantra, to train my attention to say, this is who I am, this is what I'm about. Then what we discover is that it becomes kind of a litmus test. Either we are, you know, making choices in alignment with that, or we're not. And when we're not, it's just an offer that we readjust what we're doing, that we realign and come back into congruency with who we say we are. Because, look, there's always going to be a slight separation, at least in my experience, there's always going to be a slight separation between our conceptual self and our actualized self. And by actualized, I mean by means of action, by means of what we do. You know, so the concept of who we are doesn't always match up with how we show up in the world, and that's okay. But the idea here is to merge the two, to work in a very heartfelt way to heal whatever needs to be healed, to create practices so that we're consciously expressing what it is we want to express, right?
Right. So you talk – I don't know if I'm jumping too far ahead here, but it seems like it fits in. You talk about being interrupting patterns. So is that part of what you're – well, tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay, so in the same context, so I recognize that there are these unconscious patterns, and in order to interrupt them, I have to have, a level of awareness that what's going on and a little bit of what's beneath it. In other words, what's the history? Where did this first begin and get created? I don't need to spend a ton of time there, but it's good to have that point of reference. Like, I see where I took on this interpretation. I see where I started in with this sort of way of either defending myself or trying to manipulate other people or whatever it was. It's an adaptive pattern for survival, right? So it makes sense in that context. And then I need to do something that represents my vision. So the best way to interrupt the pattern is decide what I do want and then express that in the world. So for me, a lot of my patterns have to do with my body and with food. So for me, one of my little mantras, again, I create these statements, is I fully inhabit my body and honor it with my choices and practices. So I create practices. I do attention training every morning where I train my attention using these mantras, these statements to re-identify who do I want to be? What do I want to embody and generate in my life? And then there are things that I do very consciously. A gratitude practice, for example, is a great way to stimulate happiness and so forth and so on. I mean, all these self-care, mindful eating for me is really important so that I'm really able to stand in the integrity of who and what I want to be. And integrity, by the way, in my language means integrated. So no part gets denied or rejected. We build a consciousness, we build a body to hold and express our vision. And so that helps interrupt the old patterns. And what we're doing is we're creating positive patterns. We're creating positive habits. We're creating rituals that are expressions of what is wonderful ways to put ourselves out in the world. You know, just how we see people, for example, we can really practice holding a vision for other people, seeing their potential, seeing past their behaviors to the core of who they are, their loving essence, right? That's a practice.
It is. And I'm going to interrupt you here for a minute because you immediately took me to this flashback of on my trip here, I stopped in, I think it was in Needles, California. And I ended up, because of I was driving a 16-foot truck and towing my car, so turning around in a location was really kind of a bit of an issue. And I pulled into this $25 a night motel. And there was a pickup truck parked in the middle of the parking lot. And as I pulled around, I realized I was not going to get around this truck without taking it with me. So I stopped and I got out. And there's a man that was kind of sauntering over me, tall, he was lanky. He was a bit disheveled. He was missing a couple of teeth. And he said to me in kind of a southern drawl, "Would you like me to move this truck so you could get around it?" And I told him, "Yes, that would be wonderful." And we got into conversation. And he told me his name was Michael. And he was the mechanic there. And he showed me where I could park so that I would not be in anybody's way, which I did. And then I went over to the office. And there was a note on the door that says, "If you want a room, go across the parking lot to the 99 bar." So I went across.
I love it.
And I spoke with the bartender, whose name was, of all things, it was wonderful, Charity. So Charity filled out the little bit of paperwork. She pulled this box towards me and towards her that showed me that the price was $35. And I said, "Gee, I was kind of hoping to get that $25 price that was out there." And she said, "Well, okay, I suppose I can do it for $30, and that includes tax." I said, "All right." And so then she handed me the key that was rubber banded to the remote for the television. And out of the box, she pulled the hotel size shampoo and conditioner and body lotion and a bar of soap. And when I got over to the hotel room, the lights didn't work. I got into the bathroom, and the shower door was about 12 inches wide. And there was this little teeny bar of used soap still in the shower. And then all the electricity went out. So I fumbled my way to the door, and I saw Michael standing out in the parking lot talking to some people, and asked him, I said, "Michael, you're the maintenance person here, right?" And he said, "No, I'm the mechanic. Why, what's wrong?" So I told him the electricity had gone out, and he said, "Oh, well, let me go get him." So he marched down to another room, where he knocked on the door, and an elderly man came to the door and gestured and talked, and pretty soon they together came walking down the pathway, and this other man was kind of grizzled and also missing some front teeth, and, you know, had just his long pair of summer shorts on and his socks, and he went trotting on by me and went to the circuit breaker and turned on the lights again. And when he went back, I said, "So this is going to then take care of us for the night, right?" And he looked at me and he said, "Well, hopefully."
I love it. I love it.
But what happened then, and then I went in and it was fine. I mean, the air conditioner was on. It was getting cool. It was 107 degrees outside. And I had to laugh at myself because my criteria had been, I need a bed and a shower. I'm tired. I'm hot. I need to have a shower and a bed. I never even included air conditioning in my criteria. But there I had the air conditioner that got the room cooled down. It was obviously not one of your high-class motels. But I discovered from this that I had these people around me and in an area of town that was not perhaps the best area of town. And yet these were my personal angels and guardians. Yeah. So it taught me didn't teach me. It was another representation of don't judge an angel by its outer trappings. Sure. Don't judge others by how they look, what education they have. See the potential in them and see that beauty in them and see the angel in them. Yeah. So it was a long way around getting back to your point.
Yeah, no, it's actually great because what you've brought up actually is, I'm going to jump in the middle of it. So there's another perspective. So the other side of this story is the story where we do judge all of these situations, right? And they're both true. They're both us in any given moment. Like in this moment, you operated from a place of gratitude and from a generous space where you allowed things to be different than the judging aspect of you might perceive them as. Is that accurate?
Right, yes.
Okay. So here's the part from my work, the difference, the big distinction. How do we want to be with the part of us that judges? Because the world I live in is not either or. It's both and. I am both incredibly generous and loving and kind, and I am also judgmental and narcissistic and self-absorbed and unkind. And my work is to be with both parts of me and see what they're expressing. So on this sort of right-hand side, right, the part of me that's kind and loving and understanding, we see a lot of possibility. On the left-hand side, we sort of see how I diminish things and crunch everything down to a very narrow way of viewing things, this sort of small box, if you will, that holds a lot of my hurts, a lot of my rough experiences. And the challenge for all of us, from my perspective, one man's opinion, is to be able to hold all of it and operate in this kind of complexity. So that, because we, you know, one of the things that I think we can get caught up in, anytime we're in a should or an ought to, it's a kind of tyranny. Even if it's the best intended should or ought to, right?
Right.
It still sets us up for situations where we fall short of it. And our ability, when it's a should or an ought to recover is greatly diminished by that should or that ought to. Whereas, my wife and I, for example, have a 3-minute rule. So we can go into our defensive stuff, but we try to keep it to 3 minutes. And it's really beautiful that we can do that. So we don't have to go as far with it. And we can recover and repair because we have a practice very quickly. Whereas in the past, with all my shoulds and ought tos and my conceptual self that I'm this great guy, when I'm not so great a guy, it really flies in the face of this person I quote-unquote want to be. And the recovery is brutal. And the amount of energy I've spent, you know, trying to keep this conceptual self together is draining. So I need to be able to be all of who I am, including the parts that I don't always like, the parts I don't always know what to do with. Does that make sense, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. I came to a conclusion long ago that we are bad and good. We label ourselves bad and good, and we are all of those things. And if we want to be balanced, we have to accept both parts of ourselves or all parts of ourselves. But I want to hear about your recovery, your 3-minute rule. Would you tell us about that?
So
tell us what you do, how you practice it.
So this is called dimensionalizing. It is the 3-minute rule, but the point of telling the 3-minute rule is what we're actually doing here. So, in my world, things can be true and not true simultaneously. Again, it's a both and. So I am in many person, many people, and one person, many people, I should say. And so the idea that there's a story, for example, We make sense of our lives in terms of stories, and stories hold a lot of this patterning, right? We start to tell the story of what you did or didn't do or should or should not have done, and we're off, right? All of my stuff around disappointment or not being good enough or whatever gets played out in a moment when I get triggered and start to tell a story. So the story's fine, but there's a couple rules. One is, instead of saying, you know, you always or you never, what I do is I say a part of me feels like you never, or it feels as if, or part of me, yada, yada, or the story this part of me tells is da, 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 da. So I hold the space for what I'm saying to be true and not true. And then what I work to do is create other stories that can also be true. And what's brilliant about this is you get about a half a dozen stories going, all of which are threads of truth and possibility all muddled together, right? And you now live in a kind of spacious, what I call dynamic complexity, where it's like I can see these threads of possibility. And I can follow any given one at any given moment and make it so, right? So this is holding a more gracious way of viewing my experience. And so when we start down a storyline, my wife and I have an agreement that we're only going to stay with it for 3 minutes before we start another story, before we allow for the option for there to be another interpretation of what's going on. And another interpretation. You only need to get a few of these up in the air before you start to say, oh, I got it. I got it. Right?
That's great. That's really great.
It is great. It's a relief because now I don't have to walk on water. I don't have to be, you know, I get to be more real and more human, and, you know, I get to allow for more parts of me. It's a much more spacious way to exist in the world.
Wow. So if somebody wanted to start practicing this, can you give a 3-step process that they could follow? I know you just explained it very well, but can you give sort of a 3-step process that would say?
I don't know if I have it defined that way. I think the process is this. It starts with and even the vision process. So, you know, the challenge is visions are kind of complex. There's very simple visions which become like goals, like goal setting. And then visions can be more complex when they become less directive and more directional. So we talk about it in terms of a sense of vision. It's a sense. So we have a sense of possibility. We have a sense that's been around us our entire lives about who we really are and what's possible in our lives, but we sort of ignored it because we've been doing this adaptive thing of getting by and crunching everything down to a very small box of how the world works, right? Limited perception. So we want to open that up. When we start to open that up, we start to allow for parts of us, these fragments, to hold. And then we want to begin to work with those fragments so that we're caring for ourselves in the most constructive way, and we're moving and constantly moving towards what's possible, constantly moving towards what it is we want to create and generate in our lives. And in service to that, we begin to see these aspects of us, these complexities, and those get held in a particular way. There's a nice little analogy. You tell me in terms of time. I don't know how much time we have left.
Oh, we're doing fine.
Good. Oh, good.
We have lots of time.
Oh, good, good, good. So, okay, then I'll describe it this way. So there's a tea ceremony. I think it's a Japanese tea ceremony where if the cup gets broken, what they would do is they would put it back together and they would fill the crevices, the cracks. Sometimes the cracks, a little shard is missing or whatever. They'd fill it with gold. And so the most broken teacup, which has the most gold in it, is the one that they offer to their most honored guests.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that's such a beautiful way of holding the repair process, you know, that we literally put gold in the fragmented parts of us. You know, gold being, we see the value in what we've been through, and we offer that in the world. So that's just a piece of the process. So it's not about, you know, it's about, again, really becoming okay with these aspects of who we are, and then finding our way of offering that in the world. And at some point, that tips into a kind of personal imperative. This vision thing takes on a quality of, there is a unique experience that's mine that includes all these broken, chipped, you know, parts of my life that I have to offer in the world. I mean, I wrote a book about weight release because I've struggled my whole life with this weight thing, and now the way that I hold it allows me to offer that to other people who are caught in the same tyranny, who are caught in the same I'm not good enough stuff, who are caught in the same adaptive patterns that are, you know, all about suppressing emotion or whatever, hiding, to carry extra weight to hide. So now we've got a whole different way of viewing it. And instead of feeling like there's something wrong with me that I have to fix, I hold the perfection, which, you know, I say I'm perfect, complete with all of my imperfections. That's the part of it. So in that way, you know, I get to be, again, in one person, many people, and again, I'm moving towards this vision, which in this imperative, which is really my offer. What do I have to offer in the world? In service to everybody healing, in service to the greatest good.
Awesome. So if somebody was going to, or when somebody begins to create their personal proclamation,
yeah,
some of what I've heard you say, tell me if I'm right or wrong or how it changes or whatever. Some of that is going to be who I see myself as, my goal, my vision of who I am growing into, who I want to become.
Precisely. And
through that, I'm also going to see, it's going to bring up a lot of these fractured parts of myself that I can address individually. For instance, with you talk about with your weight of saying I am perfect in my body. I fully inhabit my body.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the way you...
Well, when someone says, I fully inhabit my body and I honor it with my choices and my practices, and they say that as a mantra every day and they train their attention on that, then their choices are going to change, right?
Right, right.
Because if I'm saying in my mind's eye, if I'm repeating, I fully inhabit my body and honor it with my choices and practices, and I'm out in the world and there's choices to be made, I got to stay in my body. I got to keep centering and grounding and being compassionate with, you know, for me, I've had anxiety my entire life. And at one point it was debilitating. You know, I lived in a state of anxiety all the time. And it was, I had to come to a sense of peace with that part of me. And I had to begin to learn. That's how I began to learn meditation originally. I was 13 when my mother started teaching me what was called autogenic training. And it was a way of settling, you know, of quieting my mind and so forth. And, you know, over the course of my life, those tools and others became really valuable. And then when I realized that I could empower all of it, again, with a sense of vision, that I have something to give in the world, it upped the ante. It wasn't just about maintenance. It wasn't just about survival. It became from survive to thrive. Now I've got something I've got to do and be in the world, and it's bigger than me. It's of service to something. And I think then when we all start to get, I mean all, when as many people as possible, because I'm not trying to list everyone in that.
Uh-huh.
The people who listen
right.
are the people who are supposed to listen, right? You and I both know this. We land where we're supposed to. So the people who go, wow, I want that, you know, then the offer is figure out what it is you have to give in the world, and don't be confused. It includes the parts of you that you previously thought were unlovable, because in learning to love that part of us, we have something profound to give. Because there's lots of people, I assure you, anybody, that they're caught in that same paradigm.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I have a request, Freeman, that you repeat that mantra again,
sure.
A little more slowly. Cindy would like to type it up so it could be in our Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group, so that people can see it and have it more clearly.
Yeah, when we say the mantra, are we talking about the personal proclamation, which is quite long, or are we talking
right.
about just
no.
I fully inhabit? Go
yes,
ahead.
That one. That
the personal
one.
Proclamation.
Yes.
Okay. So
no. The mantra about fully inhabiting your body.
Yeah, I fully inhabit my body and honor it with my choices and practices.
Okay. Say it again. I fully
inhabit
fully
my body.
I'm typing here. Body. And honor it.
With my choices and practices.
Choices and practices. There.
Yeah.
Now we've got it in the group. I will post your personal your proclamation later. Personal proclamation, because you have it on your website, on your Facebook page. Which,
yeah,
since I'm mentioning
page.
That, let's tell people how they can connect with you. Where can they find
okay.
you?
Well, people can find me on Facebook. I mean, that's fine. I still have a couple of thousand people, I think, that can friend me if they'd like or subscribe. Yeah, I know, it's crazy, isn't it? So Freeman Michaels, just easy. There's not a lot of Freeman Michaels running around the world. Michaels with an S. And then my show, my radio show is called Cutting Edge Consciousness, that I co-host with filmmaker Barnett Bain. We have Bruce Lipton coming on this week. Week before last, we had Neil Donald Walsh on. Greg Braden was on three weeks ago, I guess. Who else? Debbie Ford's coming up to talk about Shadow Effect. I think she's in 2 weeks. So that's a great show to check out. And my book is called Weight Release, A Liberating Journey. That's the Service to Self website, Service to Self, spelled Service T-O, self.com. It's my personal coaching website. I am a personal coach. That's primarily how I make my living. And I work with individuals. I work with a couple companies these days doing the coaching. I do some executive coaching. So I do a broad range of coaching. That's my work.
Okay, so servicetoself.com, service T-O.
And then the radio show cuttingedgeconsciousness.com, and of course there's a Facebook page for that as well. I offer that people find me whichever way makes sense for them. I mean, it's really one of those things where my thing is to be of service, and so when people find me in whatever way they do, those who want to coach with me, fantastic. Those who some of the people really enjoyed the series I did with Lilou Massé. I did an eight-part series with her, coaching her through some weight-related mindset stuff. There's myriad ways to find what I do, and similar to this show, I'm always doing shows, and I do a show with Betsy Chassie often, who of course produced and directed the What the Bleep Do We Know, her show is called Life Unscripted. So I'm doing that on the 20th. I'm doing that this Thursday at 9:00. I'll be on that show. It's a broad range. I'm out there. If you like my material, all you have to do is find me, friend me, and I'll accept, and then you can be part of the whole thing that I'm putting out.
Right. I'd like to back up a little bit, Freeman, and one of my favorite questions is to ask people where they came from and how you figured out this was your passion. Now, you've talked about having anxiety. You've talked about having weight issues. How did you come to free yourself from, yes, the autogenic training, but how did you come to free yourself from them and discover that this is what you wanted to do?
The acting. I was, as a young boy, very gregarious and I like to be the center of attention, and I like to perform. And as a kid, I was on a show called Get Box Tickle. I was probably roughly 6 years old, and I did just a few segments for it. It was a local show out of San Francisco where I grew up. And growing up, I did some plays. And at some point in high school, I went to an all-boys high school, and I realized there were girls doing plays, but there were none on the football team. So I quit the football team and started doing theater. And I got a scholarship to college in theater. I got a two-thirds of my tuition paid for 4 years. I went and did a theater arts degree at Santa Clara University. And getting out of college, I met my first mentor, my big personal growth mentor, is actually my acting coach. And in method acting, it was really about getting in touch with my feelings, which I was having real trouble getting in touch with my feelings, and other things were kind of coming apart. It was this sort of perfect storm of things that brought me to therapy, and very quickly after that, to men's work. So I started doing men's work, and I've worked with Mankind Project and the Men's Work Center of Los Angeles and other organizations throughout the years, doing a lot of men's work. And then life stuff. I mean, I losing jobs, my first wife and I getting divorced, and all the various bumps and twists and bends and turns. It all has come to, I was a soap opera star in the middle 90s. I mean, so the part of the weight thing is, as a little boy, I did not have very good self-esteem. I wet my bed till I was 12. I felt like I was fat, whether I was or wasn't is still a big question mark in my experience, because the pictures actually say that I wasn't as heavy as I perceived myself to be. Kind of one of those crazy moments. My wife and I were going through these pictures my mother had sent to me in Los Angeles, and she said, you know, Freeman, I always said I was a fat kid. And my wife said, you know, you weren't really that fat. I mean, yeah, you're a big kid, but you weren't fat. And it was like the first time I ever saw that. I looked at the picture. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm not fat. And I say, that's so not the mental picture I have in my head. And it's because the kids called me fat ass Freeman. And it was just them teasing me. And, of course, kids don't do that. They don't have a filter. If you tell them something, you know this, Jen, they take it on. I mean, I took it on, right?
Yeah.
So I believed for, and I'd seen those pictures, so I don't know why it never registered, but I had this deep and profound belief there was something wrong with me, that I was fat. And, of course, wetting the bed until you're 12 is brutal.
Right, yes.
And I was told I was too sensitive. And so all of this culminated in me finding ways to be successful, namely acting. I sort of had a blossoming where I got thin at a certain point, got a lot of attention from women for my look. So that became what I identified with. And, you know, all the bends and turns. So, I mean, it's not a one sentence, you know, here's the moment in time. It was a near-death experience, and I realized I saw the light. Yeah, not really. I mean, it's more just, you know, again, here's the thing I will say. There is a scent, I think I mentioned this earlier just briefly, that's been around me my whole life. And when I pay attention to it and I follow it, and it's interesting because when I do yoga or when I have sort of perfect moments, you know, kind of peak experiences, I experience a sense memory, like a waft of a smell. And I know I'm grounded and I'm in my body and I'm centered in those moments. And I know it's a great time to open up the possibilities because I believe there's something I'm meant to be doing. I mean, I believe I'm doing it now, but I didn't know that. And it's just one of those things that, you know, and I think everyone has this. It's learning how to follow that scent, you know, learning how to trust it and how to allow ourselves to discover and be discovered by, you know, these certain things, whether it's artistic or creative or relational. There's these ways that our sort of, you know, potential is I don't know, it's just sort of expressed in front of us, and we get to go, oh, and then we know we're there because we feel at home, you
right.
know?
Right.
I feel that way with people. You know, I just connect with them on some level, and I'm like, I know you, you know?
Yeah.
I just haven't, we just haven't been together till now. But do I know them? Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I wet the bed for a long time, too. And I remember one time when my uncle threatened me, and I hadn't wet the bed in a while, but we went to stay at their house, and he threatened me, and he said something about, if you wet the bed tonight, blah, blah, blah. Well, of course, I did. And it was so mortifying to do that. It took a while to get over that.
Big time. And there's some days where, you know, I say literally I'm hearing from my little fat bedwetter and he needs a hug. Because I start feeling, you know, not good enough, and I know that guy intimately. And it gets really dark in his world. And so I got to pull him up and give him a big hug and tell him it's going to be okay. Because he's overwhelmed. And he exists in me, you know, and I don't reject him. I love him because, you know, he's beautiful. And then I see him out in the world. It's interesting. I see him in two different ways. More and more I see him from a loving, compassionate perspective. But, you know, in my book I talk about how whenever I was thin, because I was always in this battle with my weight, I was sure that if I was skinny I was lovable, and if I was fat I wasn't, right? So whenever I got skinny, and I went through a bunch of iterations of me where I went up and down all the time, I would look at fat people and I would hate them. But of course that was just me on a different day. That was just it was just me hating me because I was sure I was going to be that again. And so what's happened in my life is, you know, I have tremendous compassion for people who struggle with weight. I have tremendous compassion and so, you know, part of the game is, again, I have to love both sides of me, the part of me that's judgmental. And whenever I'm judging, I choose to see it as a self-reflection. So anytime I'm saying, you know, that person's an idiot, I add the phrase, and so am I.
Yeah.
So I can allow for the part of me that's showing up in that way, you know, and I don't make it about what the person is or isn't doing necessarily. In that moment of creating that space, I can really respond, you know, because when I'm triggered, I don't respond well. But if I can create just a little space to have compassion for the part of me that's showing up that way, I can often diffuse it, you know, versus escalate. Because oftentimes when someone's showing up in a particular way and behaving a certain way and we're really reacting and we know it's about us and we can get a little compassion in there, we can just say a few words and diffuse the entire thing, which is a beautiful gift. Again, the three-minute rule. It's like, you know, don't let it go that far before we get some space in there to go, oh, right, I know this, you know?
Yeah.
And the moment it's happened, it's hard to do. I mean, I'm not going to pretend for even a minute that I don't really get triggered. I do. But again, if I can really know that, you know, as soon as my awareness kicks in that I'm triggered and I have some practices, we call them pattern interruption practices, and of course breathing is a big one, but there's others where we really can interrupt the pattern and make adjustments. If it's a, you know, it's a way of caring for ourselves or a way of responding in the world or just taking a break, you know, excuse me for a minute, I need to use the restroom and go rest, take a break, come back, and then respond to what's going on in our lives, or in our experience, I should say. That's the I hate to call it a trick, but that's the trick.
Well, that's a good point. So let's talk about that for just a minute, some of these pattern interruption ideas. So let's just say that somebody gets into a situation where they are totally triggered and they flare off. What are two or three different things they can do? One is breathing. One would be to say, excuse me, I need to go use the restroom. What would be another one that they could do that easy things that can come to mind that they don't have to think about too hard in order to interrupt that pattern?
So there's a little intention piece that's helpful, which is something positive we can say about what we want in the situation versus. So I have a tough time with this in the moment to say exactly what one would say, because we're talking in hypotheticals and we haven't defined it. But just to say something like, so with my wife, for example, I want to reconnect with you, but I don't know how to do that right now. So let me take 5 minutes. Or I want to reconnect with you, but I'm so furious right now. So if I can lead with what I want. This is true, too, when we come back to relating to someone. I call it a care-fronting approach. So we, instead of confronting someone, we care-front, which means we lead with intention. So I would, I guess, to demonstrate, I'd say something like this. I'd say, Jan, you know, I really care about our relationship. I don't want there to be confusion between us. So I want to talk about what happened yesterday, you know. And that's different than you were being a jerk yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So it's again, leading with intent. Because intention directs experience. So this is where we sort of set situations up with intention, but also we can interrupt them with intention. We can go, we can see it's going a direction we don't want to go, and we can just, if we can just get a sliver of what do we want here, we can snap the pattern of going down that road, and we can say, okay, I want to connect with my wife, and this is not in service to that. So I want to connect with my wife, but I'm also acknowledging that I'm furious right now.
Right. So it's okay, you know, to say to the person, I'm really angry right now. And I need to take some time to breathe.
Exactly. Because they know we're angry. I mean, that's pretty clear. But we're acknowledging we're furious and that, you know, I don't want to get into something that's destructive. Let me figure out if I can wait to collect myself. You know, give me a minute here.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's powerful stuff. I mean, it's a lot to be human. And most of us have tried to be superhuman. And it's a bad bargain.
Well, that's for sure.
Go ahead. No,
I'd like to ask you two things.
Surely.
Talking about a personal mission and creating a vision for your future, are there, say our listeners want to do this, they've come to the point where they say, okay, I want to have my personal proclamation and I'm going to address these various parts of myself that have been fractured or that are painful, and I want to create a mission and a vision for myself that's going to be productive, or that I'm going to really love living my life. Can you give a couple of ideas on ways to go about doing that?
Sure. So keys are, it should be generous and generative. The we think of it as an offer. When it's an offer, that I'm offering something, that's something that, especially if we're going to proclaim it, that people can get behind and they can get excited about and they can get on board with. A lot of times when we're trying to heal, we can go into a kind of narcissistic place. It's okay, it's developmental, it's appropriate, but the goal is to move through that to where we recognize we have something to give in the world. So when we're coming from the place of offer, from generous, generative, people can get on board with that. That's one piece. I'm sitting at my computer. I have half a mind to pull up the guidelines, but I don't have time to do it. There are guidelines, and when I'm working with people, I send them a worksheet so that they can kind of work through what are the pieces to creating a vision. There's something too about mission statement isn't precisely a vision. So I do make some distinctions, and I work with both. I have a mission statement, and I have some personal proclamations, and I have ultimately a vision. And I use vision for a lot of things. I have a vision with my wife. We created 28 things that represents the quality of how we want to be in relationship with each other. And for 4 months, this is back in 2006, we did a Imago workshop. We read that, I would read one, she would read one every night before we went to bed. And again, it's like, if that's what we stand for, then we pick up our pieces pretty quick because, you can't keep behaving in a way that doesn't fit for very long when you're holding that in your consciousness. Same is true with my family. We have a family vision for my adult son and my two little ones. We've all gotten together and formed this, and we've formed practices, things we do consciously to express the vision, and we've created standards, which are, sort of, here are some standards that, what we will or won't do, in service to the vision, and we get together every Sunday night, and we read it. We read our vision statement, and we read the practices, and we talk about the standards to be sure that there's no breakdowns. And anyone in the family can declare a breakdown, top to bottom. My 7-year-old daughter, if I'm not in integrity, if I'm doing something that doesn't match our standard, she can say it. We have a courtesy standard. So if I'm not using please and thank you, my daughter has my permission to say, please. You're supposed to say please, Papa. And I'm like, oh, right, please, or thank you, or something like that. That's perfectly legit, because We really want to hold the vision as sacred. And it's quality driven. It's what are the qualities about our home and about how we relate to one another, and that we all form this together. And it's powerful, powerful tool.
So can you explain the difference, too, between a vision statement and a mission statement?
Yeah. My personal mission statement is I facilitate growth and healing by modeling authenticity and teaching the service to self process, or sharing my work with others, either or. That's what I do. I facilitate growth and healing, and I do it by modeling authenticity and sharing my work. Okay, that's what I do. My vision is actually hashed out in a bunch of qualities that – there's about, 20 items on my vision statement. So my practices express my commitment to loving, honoring myself. I have an amazing relationship with my wife. All these things that are part of I'm in the flow. I'm present. I'm honest. Okay. I'm compassionate. All these qualities that represent how I want to be in the world. That's a piece of it.
Okay, so a mission statement would be kind of an overall umbrella type of who you are and what your mission is, and the vision statement would be steps along the way or who you the nitty gritty
quality. So for our family, we have a loving, kind, and respectful relationship with one another. Our home is safe, comfortable, supportive, and joyful environment to live in. Our home is relatively neat and orderly. We had to do relatively because we all have different opinions about what that looks like. We're open and honest with each other. We communicate our feelings, needs, and wants clearly with one another in service to having a healthy, happy home. We respect each other's personal space and, onward. And there's a number of them. And then in service to that, We have practices. We all have brunch together on Sundays. We hold regular family meetings. We pick up after ourselves. The adults track groceries and make lists. And then the standards are the courtesy standard. We have silly ones like the ice standard. So people have to fill the ice tray if it's half full, you know. And we do all these things. You know, the butter standard. If you use up too much butter, put more butter in the butter tray. Or, you know, there's a morning standard, you know, that I, before I go on my computer, I help the kids get dressed. Lunch is made. Help everyone get out the door. And so once a week we evaluate all these things and we say, what are the standards, you know, and other practices that are going to help bring us closer so that we do have these quality experiences with one another. That's how it works. And then the same would be true of the vision statement is for myself, is how do I want to be in relation to myself in service to, you know, my mission, in service to what I want to put out in the world and the kind of person I want to be. Does that make sense?
Well, absolutely. So, but a question, do you have a particular, I mean, is your mission statement, you have a personal mission statement, do you have a mission statement for your family, for your business, and then you have the vision statements, or is your mission statement?
You absolutely could. Our family has a vision, but we don't have a mission statement, so that would be something you might scratch your heads and go, do we need a mission statement? I think for companies it's very helpful. You know, for companies, the idea of a shared vision. I just did a training up in Canada with a fairly large company, again, through my friend Gabrielle. I was on the team, and we were working with them on visions, creating a personal vision and then sharing vision and enrolling people in a vision and helping them co-create a vision. Very powerful tool to bring people into alignment and to support collaboration and cooperation and honesty and authenticity. It's like when that thing that we're creating that's sort of represents our potential, represents what we're moving towards, something that we want to generate in our lives, it's very empowering. And then when we get to the place where we'll do whatever it takes, like that's I in my personal proclamation, which wasn't what I read too. I have a different one. I won't read it, but there is another one. I say that I've given my life to this. This is my life. It's not this isn't a maybe I'll change my mind tomorrow. I'm committed to the quality of experience and to the offer that I'm making in the world 100%. Not backing off it ever, you know? And so when we do that, it's a game changer. You know, we really do look at our choices in a different way, and we can align with our practices, you know, and so mindful eating takes on a whole nother quality. It's not about me losing weight. It's not about me looking good. It's about me being able to maintain energy and focus and clarity and connection, because I'm on a mission from God to steal from the Blues Brothers. You notice in the Blues Brothers, that movie, they did whatever it took. I mean, they crashed cars and they went as, and you, it's just a great analogy that those guys were on a mission from God. So there's nothing they wouldn't do. And I think that's a really good analogy for what I'm talking about.
I do agree. And I've recently come around again and again and again to recognize it's the old biblical term that my body is the temple of my spirit. So it's I am obligated. If I am living my life for spirit, then I am obligated to take the best care of my body that I possibly can, whatever that means.
And your sense of what it is you're giving, that spiritual imperative, then in service to that, you'll do it. But if it's about trying to look good or something like that, you may or may not.
Yeah.
That's why having it defined is so helpful.
Right. That's true. So I'll have to make some practice steps and vision steps, because I'm not going to go running in the heat of Sedona. In fact, I'm not going to go running at all. But
I don't recommend anything like that. So it's very interesting, because my self-care stuff, I do yoga and I walk every day. And the quality of my experience when I walk is about centering and grounding and so forth and so on. So no, no deprivation, no self-punishing stuff. That's all old paradigm. It's about how do I love and honor myself in service to this bigger mission, and it's a different deal entirely.
Right. We're getting a little bit of static from, I'm assuming it's from your phone. It may be from the internet. Who knows? But that's okay. So, Freeman, we're coming fairly close to the end of our show, and I would like to ask you what I have not asked you, if there's something that you that I have not asked you that you'd like to address, what you want to say to our audience who said, Cindy said they're not hearing any of the static that I heard, so we're cool. But is there something to say or something that I haven't asked you that you'd like to address?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, the biggest thing is that each of us find for ourselves what it is we stand for, and it's got to be generous. It has to be something that's a generous offer, not about what shouldn't be, but what we really want to create and generate with our lives, and then move in that direction. That's the key of my own personal mission. It's what I work with my clients on. Because it brings back life force energy, and it supports connection, it supports intimacy, and it supports caring, and it's a better bargain. So, moving out of survivalism, to steal my dear friend Jeff Brown's language, and moving into enrealment, where we can be as real as possible and mm-hmm. show up in the most generous and helpful way for ourselves and others.
I love the new paradigm of generosity, of getting out of the it's all about me, to how can I be generous? How can I give? What can I give? Who am I that I can give to somebody else?
Yeah.
I think that's
exactly.
So important.
It's a beautiful thing, because the offer of that is a new level of fulfillment. You know, when we do, I mean, it seems trite. It's been said so many times. When we move outside of looking at ourselves and start to look out, you know, from the standpoint of what can we give, the world opens up in a particular way, and we see opportunities. What we have to know is it's a combination of healing the internal, so we have something outside of us to give, and when we see something outside of us that we don't like, to look at internally what needs to be healed, so we can act in the most appropriate way towards what we're perceiving out there, kind of thing.
I'm processing that.
Yeah. Well, our ability to respond to the world out there is our ability to own what's being reflected. So, look, we all have filters. We all have ways we view the world that if we can begin to, you know, again, integrate integrity, we can respond more effectively to what's showing up.
It brings me back to the saying that we've had for so many years of we create our own universe.
Totally.
And we do. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, so I choose, that was the whole proclamation at the beginning, I choose to live in a generous world where, you know, to the degree I'm able to hold a vision for other people and see their essential loving essence and show up in the world in that way, I that's a powerful world. I choose it. I choose it every day. My thoughts, my behaviors, my actions.
Then I'm going to... if you're agreeable with this, say that our affirmation or proclamation for today is, I choose to live in a generous world, and I am generous.
That's fantastic. Beautiful.
Okay. Good. So tell us again, one more time, how people can get in touch with you. They can get in touch with you on Facebook. And
yep, Freeman Michaels on Facebook, Service to Self, if they're interested in coaching or any of my programs, and Cutting Edge Consciousness, use my radio show, cuttingedgeconsciousness.com, and we'll hang out together in some way, shape, or form.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much for being a guest today, Freeman. It's just really been wonderful.
Oh, bless
I've
you.
So much enjoyed
Great
it.
You. Awesome.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much.
All right, and I'd like everybody to know that you can get in touch with me at janrevell.com. That's JANRE, V as in Victor, ELL.com. And remember that in September, I am still offering the Jan's Moving Special of angelic readings or intuitive readings and or half-hour coaching that is only $25. So take advantage of it. Call me. Well, call me. Go to my website, janrevell.com, and you'll even find a number there that you can call. And otherwise, connect with me on Facebook or email me at jan@janrevell.com. And the radio show, I'm not sure if it's radio or TV or both, cuttingedgeconsciousness.com. Go check it out and listen to Freeman on his show. And also servicetoself.com. Thank you all again for being with us this week. And I wish you soul blessings. We'll talk with you again next Monday. Bye for now.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.